Thank you, Mr. Lawson. Good morning, Council. Good morning, Mr. Moore, Ms. Jennings, and Ms. Griffith. I am here. If you can believe it, this is our 10th year from the Joshua Freeman Foundation's inception and our program, the Freeman Stage at Bayside. And we want to thank Sussex County for being such a great partner and to let you know that what started as a vision in an arts desert in 2008 has turned into a thriving arts area. And I'd like to go through some of the journey of the last 10 years, report on what we're doing this year and what you might want to see in the future. And my colleague and my wingman, Doug Phillips, is here, just in case I have any technical difficulties and to anything I might have missed. So the thing about the Joshua Freeman Foundation is we've stayed key to our purpose, mission, and values. And the mission is really partnering to present memorable performances and inspired arts education for all. And we really strive to be a vital source of exceptional cultural experiences for everyone in Sussex County. Our board of directors is up there. We're led by our founder, Michelle Freeman, and our rest of capable board members span the diversity and geography of Sussex County. 2016 was an outstanding year for us. We had 90 performances, 41 arts and education events where children in all 9 districts of Sussex County schools were able to participate in high-quality arts experiences. We had 15 national recording artists, 62,381 patrons. And to put that in perspective, in year one, in 2008, we had 13,800. So I think you would agree we've grown quite a bit in the last 9 years. A number we're really proud about is 18,912 arts and education and outreach guests. So again, that is students and folks who otherwise would not be able to enjoy the arts. And we work with a lot of nonprofit organizations in Sussex County to make sure that those families can enjoy the arts at the stage. We had 13,908 volunteer hours this past year, and we have over 225 volunteers, and our volunteers were awarded the Governor's Outstanding Volunteer Service Award in 2016, and collectively, our volunteers have contributed service in the amount of $725,000 when we use the independent sector's rates since they've started. And of course, we would not be able to do what we do without our stage sponsors. So we've grown our stage sponsorships for people who donate to our mission from 24 sponsors in 2008 to 302 sponsors in 2016, and that's important because I want you to know that the community is supporting the arts in Sussex County. Since 2008, almost 250,000 people have been to the Freeman Stage and enjoyed arts experiences. We've had 50 national recording artists, again, going out back to children, over 80,000 children, 34,000 volunteer hours. We have one of the highest volunteer groups for amount of people and the service that they do in the county. We have ticket buyers from 42 states, so it really helps the tourism industry and helps bring people to our area. And something that people may not associate the arts with is the economic impact of the arts. So we've contributed back into our local community over $13 million since 2008. In 2017, we have a great season. We have 19 star series from everywhere, anyone from Tedeschi Trucks to Mary Chapin Carpenter, Chicago, Ben Harper, the list goes on, you can see it there. Our free Saturday morning children's program continues, as well as our arts and entertainment programs. Almost 40% of our stage events are free and open to the public. children 12 and under get to go to the stage for free, except for those national recording artists. So it's a very affordable family night out, and I would proffer that it's easier and less expensive to go to the Freeman stage than it is to the movies for a family. And then we have multiple fundraising events over the year to help gain awareness and bring money back into our coffers so that we can expand our mission. One of the things that the county has been so generous with is helping us with our children's arts and education program and those transportation grants. And I wanted to share a quick video clip with you this morning so that you can see the return on your investment.
And hopefully just a lot of smiles and laughter. That's what today is really
this is
about.
Actually at the stage.
Kids, you know, they have a long year with all the testing and whatnot, and this is a way to get them engaged and sort of a reward for what they're doing. So
nice.
Hopefully it's a fun day for them and you and us.
Ready? Let's do it.
With the Freeman Foundation, and for our children, this is the height of excitement for the school year. They're able to come and see things that they would never be exposed to before. We are very big on the arts in our district, so this allows them to see, as I mentioned, something and have an experience that they would never have the opportunity to do. About 62% of our students are on free and reduced lunch. They often don't get out of the town of Georgetown or the town of Millsboro to see things. So this really widens their exposure to the arts and to things that would not be available to them in any other community. So this is a very big day for our students.
I am so proud and so excited that we have students here and they're getting to see a live arts performance out in the great weather. It's just a beautiful day. Thank you.
So that's the impact that those transportation grants bring. You heard previous superintendent, Dr. Bunting, share that 62% of those children have free and reduced lunch. That's pervasive throughout all nine districts in the county, and your transportation grants help bring those buses to the stage. We've been able to expand our team, so job creation is something we're proud of. We now have 12 full-time employees. We're a good-looking bunch. 20 seasonal employees and over 200 volunteers. I think right now we're at 226. And because of our growth, we are taking steps towards the future with the Coastal Arts Pavilion at Freeman Park. We've met with planning and zoning. We are conducting due diligence. We are working on some preliminary plans. We are most likely going to start a capital campaign this year. And we continue to present a diverse mix of exceptional arts experiences for everyone to be able to enjoy. So with that, I'd like to end with a moment of gratitude to thank Sussex County Council. And if there's any questions I may answer for you, I'm glad to do so.
Any questions of council? Questions of council.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Just want to thank you.
Excuse me.
Not a question, just a comment, just grateful. I mean, the question is not a question, but I mean, we're appreciative. You guys do such tremendous work for this county, and I know the state governor comes down and every year.
Yeah.
Along with our county administrator, and you guys are truly a community event, and we're just grateful. Well, thank you.
Great, thank you. The one other thing I wanted to just present back to you from a sense of accountability is that for every dollar that is raised to the Joshua Freeman Foundation, 80 cents of that dollar goes directly into programming, 16 cents is used to raise additional funds, and only 4 cents goes to management and administration. So. Thank you so much. Enjoy your day.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Mr. Lawson.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. I think we're going to skip down to State County Finance and Revenue Committee update. Okay. As the council is aware, there is a committee that has been charged with discussing and finding potential revenue and savings at the state level in conjunction with the counties, the three counties. I am a member of that committee per the legislation, as well as Mr. Vincent representing the Local League of Governments. Ms. Jennings and I have put together a slideshow that we want to go over the most recent meeting and to talk to you about some of the proposals that are being discussed. And really, it looks like where the committee is headed is to make recommendations to the state General Assembly, particularly the Joint Finance Committee, as it relates to means to save money or generate additional funds to help the state in its budget shortfall. We met last March 23rd, and we are scheduled to meet in a few weeks. The next meeting will be the official recommendations of the committee members to be proffered to the General Assembly. So where are we right now? What do we know? The latest DFAC numbers that came out last month show that the state has a shortfall. I think we're all aware of this, roughly $385 million. The governor has released his budget. There are some details contained in the budget, but it also has some questions. We know right away that the grant and aid proposal is 11% less than last year. But as we also are aware, the General Assembly really has the job of drafting the state's budget and getting that through by the end of June. This committee, as I said, is charged with discussing ideas, and we are moving in a direction, albeit somewhat slow, I would say, and also it looks like there's been some momentum that has been lost in this committee for whatever reason, but we are moving in a direction to provide recommendations to the General Assembly. At the last meeting, there were a number of items that were discussed or brought forward, and that's what we want to talk about today. Make sure you're fully aware of what's being discussed, and if in fact there are recommendations at the next meeting that are offered, we want to make sure that the council's views on those recommendations are discussed. They are listed here. Some of these you've seen before. Some of these have been discussed before. And they're back again. So first-time home buyer tax credit, one of the points in that is to create a means test. The state 65 property tax credit, again, creating a type of means test. Another idea that was discussed is implementing a vape tax, vape meaning smokeless cigarette and tobacco products, creating a new tax on those items. Implementing a tax on home-based lodging businesses. That's the rental business that takes place that perhaps could capture a source of revenue. We'll go into more details on all of these items. At the last meeting, the Delaware Association of Realtors made a presentation. I provided in your packet and at your desk the PowerPoint that was made. It looks like this. It was stated economic impact of real estate in Delaware. This is interesting because the DAR is asking the state to look at a specific item, and if you look at this PowerPoint that's at your desk, specifically skipping to the end, they point to what is known as Form 5403, which is the real estate tax return declaration of estimated income tax, and it's the association's position that perhaps there could be a source of revenue to the state if this form was followed and maybe followed more effectively. They did get the attention of the committee, and some of the members of the committee, including state legislators, have said that they would look into it and determine if there is some kind of available revenue perhaps there if this form was followed and if there was effective auditing of that initiative. So I just pass that along. That presentation was made during the committee meeting. Okay, we've got a couple of items that we want to go into detail to make sure that you understand. I'm going to turn this over to Ms. Jennings to talk about some of the proposals that we're discussing. Ms. Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Lawson. So the first item is the State 65 property tax credit. This, if this would be implemented, it would be additional state savings. So there would be no effect to county government. But let me explain how the program works. So homeowners can come into the county. We administer the program here. and you can sign up through by April 30th, then the homeowner can receive half off the school tax of their primary resident up to $500 if they live in Delaware for at least 3 years. If the homeowner qualifies, the credit is received, and there's no consideration of the type of income that they bring in. And currently, we do have 22,000 participants. That equals about $6.9 million that costs the state. Additional information on this program is, again, the county processes the applications, and statewide, where we're $6.9 million, the entire state cost is $25 million to this program. And again, we do not, this will not affect any revenue to the county.
Can I ask a question on that one?
If sure.
Mr. President, I'm sorry. As we move forward, those dollars, the what is it to the county? Is it
so $6.9 million for Sussex County alone.
Is those dollars that are discounted, is that money that is directly taken away, I'll use that term, from the actual school districts?
It is not. So this it is a line item in the state budget, so the state will then cut the check. So the homeowner doesn't pay us through the tax bill, but we communicate to the state, and the state pays the school district that amount of money. So when I'm talking about this could be a savings to the state because it's a line item in their budget.
Sure. It's a general fund item.
Correct.
The state makes up where that money is.
Which, yeah, they
so they give away $25 million
in
statewide.
In taxes, they grab it.
They take out a general fund and pay that to the school district.
Which is taxes.
Yeah. So schools lose nothing, but the state obviously loses $25 million.
Other taxpayers have to pick up the slack for the taxpayers that got exempted.
Got exempted.
Right.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, I see it. That's what I see.
So there are some modifications that are under consideration that you probably have heard in the past. So how about we develop a means test, is what the state is thinking. So they would measure the homeowner's income and establish a limit on homeowners. So right now there is no means testing. Like I said, you turn 65, you live here for 3 years, come in, bring in your driver's license, show your proof, and you'll receive the credit. So there'll be any kind of means testing would result in a decrease to the cost to the state. There is no income analysis conducted at this time, so a new system would have to be administered here at the county in order to do this. So I would anticipate an additional cost to the county in order to administer a new type of program where we would have to verify income. There's been other modifications already proposed. So in Governor Carney's budget that he has just recently released, he does reduce the maximum where it was 500 to 400, and this results in a $5 million savings to the state. And recently, there was legislation introduced, which was House Bill 99, that changed the residency requirement from 3 years to 10 years.
Sure. They need to do something.
Okay, so the next option that was discussed is the first-time homebuyer tax credit. So how this program works currently, if you're a first-time home buyer, you receive a tax credit on the realty transfer tax. It's only the county's portion, so the state also charges 1.5%, and then the county waives its 1.5%. So the county is losing approximately $1.8 million. That's numbers I took from 2016, what we would have collected at that time. In some cases, both the buyer and seller split the 1.5% credit, resulting in three quarters of credit to each party. So our code is very open on who pays realty transfer tax, but it's assumed that the buyer pays half and the seller pays half. It's silent on that. So we're going to get into that a little bit more here. So we could look at a couple of things. And again, we're just looking at this. If the state were to have cuts to us, where can we make up some of this funding on our side? So we could develop a means test. So I looked at those 2016 data, and I saw that any homes over $400,000, if they would be exempt, we would see a $120,000 increase in revenue. If I lowered that threshold to $300,000, it would be $330,000 increase. Or if we even lowered it even further to about $250,000 house, that would result in $580,000. So this is one modification. This would be a means test.
So it's the house you're. So it's the house that you're purchasing. If it is the house that you are purchasing, if it is over that amount, then you wouldn't be exempt. Your first purchase.
That's correct. So if you're a first-time home buyer and you're purchasing a house that's over $400,000, it would not get this credit.
That's not discrimination.
Wait a minute.
Right? Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was trying to ask, is there discrimination here in this?
Not if we are across the whole board and say $400,000 and above. Yeah. No.
Mr. Arlette?
Do we know what the average purchase price is for a first-time home buyer?
Yeah, it's about $200,000. It's right about $200,000, $100,000 and something. It's close to that. When I looked at this, and the house is over $400,000, it was 15 people that would be affected. $300,000 was 57 people, and $250,000 was 113, and there's 615 people participated. So it's a very small portion of the entire group.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay.
In a first time, define a first time home buyer. What is the definition?
They have never owned a home. It doesn't have to be just Sussex County or in the state. We are very specific. Ever, it could be anywhere.
And how do you check that?
When the lawyers perform their, they do an affidavit. They sign. They verify that you have not. I talked to Mr. Moore, and he had said that the affidavit says you need to list your last three properties where you lived at that point. And that's how they do that.
And I guess we just rely on, I guess, the honesty of the applicant or whoever's buying the home.
Yes.
But I can't imagine anybody ever checks on any of that. I would almost bet my house to say that nobody's ever checked anybody. But, okay. So we're going to, the means testing will be on the purchase price.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's one option.
Okay.
One more question. And there's only 615 in calendar 16 that took advantage of this program.
That's correct.
But somebody with buying a $400,000 home doesn't seem to, you know, first-time home buyer program was supposed to help assist people getting started in life and things, and you know, a younger purchaser usually, and their incomes aren't as high. So somebody purchasing a $400,000 home doesn't seem to be under any stress from financial problems. So I don't know if, you know, again, if means testing would benefit the people who really need the help getting into the housing market. So.
But wouldn't that means testing be their income and not the house that they're buying?
Usually it would work that way, typically.
we're testing the home.
Well, it's easier this way, I think. It's easier to verify this because there's a purchase price versus trying to go back, I guess, and dig into somebody's financial dealings, get bank records and all this other stuff, find out what they own. So this, I think that's, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. We don't have the income.
This is just the easiest way to
we're setting a threshold, and right, whatever that threshold may be. And again, this is one idea for all three counties to consider if the counties needed to look to additional revenue. By state code, we have to offer a first-time home buyer credit. It just depends on what Mrs. Jennings is getting ready to show you now, how that's allocated.
Okay, moving on to the next consideration. So just like Mr. Lawson had said, it does state in state code that we do have to offer a first-time home buyer credit, but that is the extent of what the code says. So another option is to limit the credit to only the buyer's half of the 1.5%. So if we were to do that, when I said the cost was $1.8 million, we would get $900,000, so that would be half of that. So I did a chart here. So this is how I could view it. So the state right now gets 1.5%. The county gets 1.5%, and that's where the 3% is. So this is how most transactions work. So the buyer pays the 1.5, which gets divided up between the state and the county, and then the seller pays the other 1.5 to get to the 3%. So what happens if there's the first-time home buyer? So how does this transaction look? So the state still gets its 1.5% where it's divided up between the buyer and the seller, and then the county's part goes away, and then that is exempt from any of the taxes, so that the final result of that property transaction is the 1.5%. So this is the current first-time home buyer transaction. Moving on
I have a question on that one, I apologize, but why the incentive is to be given to the buyer? Why are we giving the incentive to the seller?
Because our code states, does not state absolutely it's a 50-50 split on in our code, in the county code. So really transfer tax can be picked up by the seller or the buyer.
That's right.
So we exempt the whole thing because otherwise a real estate agent could say, hey, well, I'm just putting it all onto the first time home buyer, and then the whole property would be exempt anyway. So we would have to do this modification, make it clear that if it's a first time home buyer, that it's split and then only half of it's exempt. Okay. So the modification that we're talking about, again, the state still gets its 1.5. Now, where you go away with those two, the county's portion, the buyer would still be exempt its 0.25%, but we would still, 0.75%, sorry. And the 0.75% we would still receive from the seller. So we would still receive half. So again, this would require county code, but I wanted to put that out there so you're aware of the situation.
This is what, Mr. Lawson, refresh my memory here. Newcastle County has this in their ordinance that it only goes, the half goes to the buyer, the seller goes to the county?
Yeah. That's correct.
I think Kent.
It's like us.
Kent County is like us, I think.
The two counties are like us, and Newcastle County has specified that only the buyer is exempt on the county's portion.
Which, it
somewhat makes sense.
If it's an incentive designed to assist the buyers in buying a home, it would make total sense for the buyer to receive the incentive and not the seller.
But it was, the thought process was to maybe encourage sellers to work with first-time home buyers to encourage these type of transactions. So originally why they wanted to do it. I don't know if it encourages anybody, but I agree with Newcastle County for once. I think they're on the right track.
These are new homes as well as
any transaction.
Any.
But it has to be a home or land.
This is the first one you ever bought.
It can't be a vacant lot.
Can't be a vacant lot.
Right. So this has to be changed in the code?
Yes, it be changed in county code to specify exemption for a buyer-only county portion, like it is resembled there in the table. It's something we would do here if in fact, you think it makes sense. I would tell you that in the discussions on the committee level, this certainly drew a lot of attention that two things. The three counties are doing it differently, depending on which county it is. And also, I don't know that it was the true intent of the original legislation to have the seller be
participating,
affected, or rewarded, if you will, in this program. So we don't need them to dictate if we want to make this change. This is really a decision by this panel, if we would like to entertain that option.
I would say yes. I mean, I don't know. We're not here to, I guess, vote on this, but
no. It would require an ordinance change, but we wanted to bring it to your attention.
Mr. Lawson, I think you should look at everything we do at the county level when it comes to exemptions and things, and look at means testing across the board, because as we move into the future, I think means testing is probably the best approach for us to, like, for the future. So anyway, I just...
1.5 and 2.25, 3.75,
anyway. Just a thought. So I maybe might want to get some people sit down and just look at everything we do.
Okay.
We got a lot of exemptions at the county level that, for why we're giving them, I don't know.
Finishing up here, I wanted to just go over quickly the two other options that are being discussed. The vape tax I made reference to. This would require the state to amend their current law to create an excess tax on smokeless cigarettes. This is in Governor Carney's proposed budget. It's being tossed around in the General Assembly, so that could be something they consider. And then last of interest, perhaps here in Sussex County, is implementing a tax on home-based lodging businesses, or said another way, amend the state law to assess a home-based lodging tax on at the same rate as hotels, 8%, on these rental properties that you see mostly in the resort area. There is a thought that the leading booking websites, that some popular ones like Airbnb, make it easy, as well as larger real estate websites that monitor and work the rental programs throughout the season, would be able to collect that tax or make it easier on the state to collect that tax. They're just discussing this. I'll tell you why. The Delaware Tourism Office has a number that's been floated out there that really drew the attention of the committee, in excess of $80 million if all rental properties were assessed an 8% tax. That number was debated quite a bit, and the Secretary of Finance even said he thinks it's south of $15 million perhaps. So two things are happening. They're analyzing whether or not this could happen in the state, and the state wants to look at it. And two, let's get a better number on the proposed revenue stream. It's a decision that the state's going to have to come up with, certainly not the county, but we're watching it closely.
Well, we don't have the ability to impose taxes, correct, legislatively, or can we? Everett,
Well, we certainly have certain authority to implement tax. We do that with our property tax now.
Okay, so yes. we could look to rental taxes at the county level. Like
we don't believe we have the authority right now to assess a rental tax. A good example, the city of Wilmington is able to assess a hotel tax today, but then Newcastle County hotels, they have to have the authority to assess a hotel tax with hotels located in Newcastle County. Mm-hmm. Currently, hotels located in Sussex County are not able, do not have the authority to assess a hotel tax.
So when somebody rents a room in Sussex County, they're paying a state rental tax, but there's no county tax, but there could be a town tax.
There could be, yes.
Right, there could be. They have to get, they went to Dover and got enabling legislation to permit them to do that. Okay. I know in some places they look at short-term rentals and long-term rentals differently. I know on the year-round, our year-round rental is many places exempt from any kind of taxes, but short-terms are not. But the only other thing is these websites that people use, I think you have to direct the website to collect those taxes. And I'll guarantee if there's a way to avoid it, you know, people will do it. And so enforcement is going to be so terribly difficult. Just a small fraction of people will do it. And then for the county or the state or anybody to try to monitor all that, it's impossible. Because of the size of that that area on the internet that you'd have to research all the time, so it's almost impossible. So I would take the position for Sussex County, possibly, or if there's any consensus, that we would try to avoid that because of just the difficulty of enforcing it, collecting it.
You're gonna spend more money, you're gonna make.
Well, it's too easy. It's like when you're dealing with a motor vehicle or something to be able to avoid certain taxes. Mike, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes,
doing
do.
Things,
I
right?
There's some people that do that. Yes.
Yeah, but anyway, but people with rental houses, it's so easy to avoid because it's a voluntary thing. The bureaucratic authority, whether it's the county or the city, is depending on the homeowner to, you know, be forthright with their rentals. And again, unless you get into their, you know, personal history, it's awful difficult. So I would just say there's got to be other ways to try to close this gap. And also, I think the impact on Sussex County on this type of market would be the biggest. The other two counties, I'm sure, don't have the short-term rental market that we have here in coastal Sussex County. So this would impact our residents more than anybody.
Mr. Lawson, this was discussing having a state law for a state tax, is that correct?
Right.
It would be statewide, yes. Yeah.
Well, but his position on discussing it, I don't think, I'm just saying to Todd, maybe he's representing Sussex County Council, that I would try to avoid putting emphasis on this particular method of collecting and closing the gap as opposed to others. You know, at the settlement table, it's easier, like we just saw with the school tax thing, where we're basing it on the home price, not looking into the individual and chasing that down. So anyway, there's easy ways to collect it. There's harder ways, and there's some ways just aren't reliable. And I think this is going to be very difficult.
Okay.
If I may just make a comment, I do think that Sussex County will be impacted far greater than the other two. So when you say a statewide tax, mm-hmm. it'll really, the burden will be on us.
Yeah, it's correct. Exactly.
Well, I think in the conversation, some of the conversations have certainly been that there's always the option of raising the tax that there is already out there.
On the
hotel motel people think it is unfair that the other people rent their homes and nobody pays that tax on that. Sure. Because what I'm hearing up there is very few people now rent their own home. They put it in some real estate agency and they rent it. It's not done by the individual, a majority of it.
A lot of it, yes.
And they're seeing results in other states that are doing this and are collecting a lot of money. A lot of money.
Right. But there's that VRBO, Home Away, there's Airbnb. You can go on and on and on. Then there's local ones. It's endless, Mike. That's the trouble. If somebody wanted to avoid paying it,
I'm sure you can.
They could easily, circumvent the system. So I'm just saying it's going to be very difficult to collect. So,
got it.
Understood.
Yeah. And one last question, a clarification. We're not a proponent for higher taxes by any means, but more so of a technicality, or I guess, or a procedure, and that is just to reaffirm that right now the state has the authority, and they also have given the authority to all towns in this county.
No, I would imagine each town individually would have to come in and sought that authority through their charter amendment and gotten that. And I don't know which each town does. Of course, not every town has a hotel or a motel within its boundaries. So that's, we know for sure to be able to levy that tax, they have to get the authority from the state.
Just want to reaffirm that. Okay, thank you.
And I know Bethany Rehoboth, and I'm sure Fenwick, I'm thinking Fenwick maybe, but they do have a tax on the short-term rentals in apartments and cottages and stuff like that. But again, they're dealing with the confines of a small town, not like a county of this size. So again, it's there's still a lot of, I'm sure, people who avoid it in a town.
Something
to think about.
Thank you. Good feedback. We will take that with us. The next meeting is Thursday, May 4th. And we will see where things go at that point.
I didn't see one, Mr. President.
Sir.
Todd, I didn't see in this presentation, or Gina, I should say, addresses to either of you, but I know I had heard that there was discussion about adjusting and changing the current percentages as it relates to our paramedics.
Not at this committee.
Not on this committee.
Not on this committee.
Correct.
Okay.
So far, we've not discussed that.
No.
Is this?
That was in the governor's budget rework.
But is that still out there? As it is still out there.
Everything's out there.
That the state is still looking to adjust, i.e., put more burden, financial burden on the county.
The conversation has been from going 70-30 to 80-20.
It's been slowly progressing that direction.
Yeah.
And what would that number reflect to the? To the
$1.4 million
to the county. Okay.
They'll probably want to go someday to its 99.1 or something, just so they can say it's a statewide system. They can control this or whatever. That was a joke, but not necessarily.
We're watching it, Mr. Arlo. Right now, it's so preliminary. They are trying to figure out, I think, where they are. And then we'll start to see, but that is certainly something that gets discussed often.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving on, Mr. President. Administrator's report. Administrator's report for April 11, 2017. Item number one, the Advisory Committee on Aging and Adults with Physical Disabilities for Sussex County. Conference Planning Subcommittee will meet on Monday, April 17th at 10 a.m. at the Cheer Center in Georgetown. During the meeting, the subcommittee will continue to discuss planning for the annual conference scheduled for October 18th. Item number two, Representative Ruth Briggs-King will be hosting an awareness workshop for opioid addictions and related issues at the Long Neck Elementary School tomorrow, Wednesday, April 12th at 6:30 p.m. Drug Enforcement Administration will provide a presentation and other community partners, including Sussex County's EMS Director Robert Stewart, will be on hand to provide supporting information as to efforts at the local level. I know Council has weighed in on that subject before. I wanted to make you aware of that important meeting tomorrow evening. Item number
6 o'clock.
It's at 6:30 at the Long Neck Elementary School.
Item 3, per the attached engineering department fact sheet, Coastal Club Land Bay 4 Phase 2 receives substantial completion effective April 5th. Item 4, reminder, the county offices will be closed on Friday, April 14th, to observe the Good Friday holiday. In addition, council will not meet on Tuesday, April 18th. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be held on April 25th at 10 a.m. And item 5, it is with sadness that we note the passing of county pensioner Betty Jo Collins on Tuesday, March 28th. Ms. Collins began her career with Sussex County in November 1987 and retired from the Recorder of Deeds as Clerk 2 in November 1995 with 8 years of service. We'd like to extend our condolences to the Collins family. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. Just as a side note, too, on the opioid awareness workshop, I have asked Mr. Costello to attend on behalf of the council. And he attended one in Seaford for us a couple weeks ago. And to anyone who knows that they're having these things, to see, please keep us aware. It's in your district, you sort of can go to if you choose to. But so we stay in touch, see if we can help some way. Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir. Ms. Jennings.